Okay, next speaker is Olav Åheim. He was introduced several times from yesterday, so I'm not going to be a long introduction. He is the currently the senior advisor at the Research Council of Norway. His background is glaciology and global climate change. He was the managing director of the NPI, Norwegian Polar Institute, and he was the first chair of CEP. CEP is a Committee on Environmental Protection in ATCM. And he was the chair of the Legal and Institutional Working Group also. He is now continue to be interested in international politics and management of polar affairs, climate change, and communicating science to the public. Many, many interests he has. I'd like to introduce Åheim.
Thank you, Don. Following Denzel in his excellent talk is a hard challenge, just as I think the one that follows you as the executive secretary is going to be having a hard challenge in the CAMELA system. I was sitting at lunch and somebody was asking me, what am I going to talk about after lunch? And I said, I have no idea. And that sounded like a joke. But in fact, when we got this title, which has been passed to all the three chairs of the CEP, I have a feeling none of us were quite sure what it meant, national and international responsibility. However, what we will talk about is how the evolution has been of, and where's this little gadget here? This one? Which one is it? Moves forward, yeah. What we will talk about is what we know about the environmental management of the Antarctic, which of course altogether is hopefully quite useful to all of you. So I'm going to talk a little bit quickly about the pre-CEP, then the early days of CEP, how is it working today, and the new challenges. And the last part in particular, of course, have come from Neil Gilbert and Tony Press, not necessarily in that order. Okay, I'm going to go very quickly through this because most of you know it already, but I'm going to pick up on a few points only. But for the completeness, we added this in our manuscript. So just note that in the Washington Treaty, environment is practically not mentioned. It just said one place about the ATCMs that they also can consider preservation and conservation of living resources. However, only a few years later, they managed to pass the agreed measures on the conservation of Antarctic fauna and flora, which was a very far-sighted piece of work at that time. However, until CAMELA came about, there were no major new environmental initiatives. Then in the 1980s, we got the CRAMRA discussions, and you've heard all about those, or a little bit about them anyway, in the previous talks, Tucker Scully among others. Environment became more important at that time, not only because the minerals issue raised the concerns of the NGOs, but of course there was a general awakening of concern of environmental issues. I can remember from those negotiations, for the first and only time in the history so far of the ATCMs, or the special ATCM, which this was, we were walking in demonstrations when we were entering the facilities for the discussions with hundreds of penguins standing outside in line on both sides of delegates. Some, of course, human-sized, humans dressed as penguins, some inflated penguins, etc., etc., and standing there were the signboards telling us how dreadful we were. And I remember one of the people involved in this, at one point, he was a Norwegian, but not myself, was in the eco, was depicted with a big knife slaughtering the whole system and blood going everywhere. So that was a time of emotions in a way we've not had since. But it caused a lot of high spirits, not high spirits, that's the wrong English word, a lot of spirit in the discussions. And of course, when the negotiated text was not ratified, that caused uncertainty in the future of the whole system. And I will concur with what Tucker said in a very careful wording, and I'm not as good on this as he is, that those parties that did not agree to the CRAMRA in the discussions, I cannot remember at any point that it was the environmental concerns that were the important reason why they did not agree to the Mineral Resource Convention. There were other reasons which I believe were paramount, However, for political and for, we might say, visual purposes, it became the environment afterwards. There was the argument that was pushed forward, not least in internal politics. So that was an interesting awakening process for a person like myself, who may be not politically naive, but yet this was a new version of the world inside and outside the negotiations. Inside the negotiations, the Norwegian delegation, which were leading part of this, we were getting interventions from environmental groups that felt that their own delegations were not active enough on this side and they wanted to push it through our delegation instead. Well, that changed. Anyway, we had a critical period. Very lot of hard work was done and we get the Madrid Protocol in 1991. This tension dropped. Ratification was slow because a number of parties felt that they'd done their work now. And so we got something called the Transitional Environmental Working Group. And I was the last chairman of the TQG in New Zealand, and maybe that was the reason, maybe the reason why it was in Norway, or maybe they were just nice. I was elected the first chair of the CEP. And in the first years of the CEP, of the committee, we actually had quite a period of time to sort out exactly what it was supposed to do. Because the committee was a different instrument from everything else that we had up to that time had in the ATCMs. As you know, it is the ATCMs that decide Antarctica at any point, and they work by consensus. However, the committee was an advisory body to the ATCM. It was not under the same rules, and this took a while to sort out. It was not difficult, but it just needed sorting out. And then after that, practice needed to be established. But for example, the advice that CP gives to the ATCM cannot be changed by the ATCM. It does not have to be a consensus advice. If the ATCM wants to pick up on this advice, it can do so, and it can make its comments. And of course, it can deviate from the advice. But the CP has a more independent role than any other body underneath the ATCM. The other bodies are set up from meeting to meeting, have their officers decided by the ATCM. The CEP elects its own officers. So we established the work role of work. One of the issues that I felt, and I'm sure I'm being unfair to some, was that SCAR at this point and in the previous years had not been functioning well as an advisory body to the ATCM on scientific advice. And especially not in the issues of management. SCAR set up a system called GOSIAC, which consisted of a few people, hardworking, dedicated, and in some cases very knowledgeable people, who then provided the advice of SCAR on management issues. The problem was that that system didn't allow other people in SCAR to participate. And in many cases, advice would come to ATCM, which some of the parties felt they had not been party to, so to speak, and they objected to this advice. Even though it might have been SCAR's advice, it was considered that they encroached into issues which were management, and that was a problem. Once the CEP got established and found its feet, CEP got its own, might say, managed competent people, and then over time this has moved into a very fruitful situation. But the GOSIAC was not. For a period, SCAR wanted to have a hand in this, which I felt, at least, was inappropriate. So, in the next stage, after the first chairmanship, there's been a growth of work, and there's a number of questions which are turning up at this point. And I'm going to go through some of these, and they're no longer personally my comments only, but we have all three been through this process of writing these comments. And what we see now is that most of the work coming forward to the ATCM on the practical level has been through CEP first. This does not mean for a moment that it always is the most important issue, and certainly does not mean that there are issues which take the most time. For example, the handling of management plans, which is one of the legal requirements that the ATCM does, and the management plans, once it is agreed, is binding on the parties. That is a huge amount of work dealing with area management, and yet the CEP does the work, the ATCM almost invariably just pass it on with some, normally some editorial comments, but the actual substance of work is in its entirety done in the CEP. Another major issue is what's called comprehensive or environmental assessment evaluations and the initial environmental evaluations. That's a very complex issue. There's a diverse opinion on whether there are too many CEEs written now. Some parties seem to write an CEE for almost any activity. Other parties write them for almost no activity. Where's the cutoff between these two types of activities? Some of the environmental organizations and ASOC seem to want a IEE and a CEE for almost any activity. And some parties maybe even write them to get their own work sorted out because they don't want to do all the evaluation themselves, so they pass it through the CEP. This is very difficult because it's tied into the legal language of the protocol, defining whether an activity is more than minor or transitory. And so organizing this in a more binding way, it will never be done completely binding, that doesn't work in the system, it's going to be very hard. But it is a challenge. The practice, however, over time has evolved roughly where the cut is between something which is small, called initial, or something which is big, called comprehensive. The issue of protective areas, the specially protected areas, specially managed areas, are, of course, as I say, a big workload. But the CP and the ATCM has not addressed, or certainly not the ATCM, the issue of whether we now have a representative set of managed areas. And so this is going to be a challenge, and we've had that challenge in the recent years also in those cases where you have a managed area which includes a marine component, and then we have set up a relatively complex way of communicating between the ATCM and the CAMELAR to avoid, because there should be no infringement of authority from either side. This system set up there also has its drawbacks, and of course within CAMELAR there are parties which feel that there should be no reduction of their ability to conduct fishing in any part of the marine system. Or this certainly should not be set up by the CEP or by the ATCM. One of the problems, and this is my own slide, this has not been tested on Tony or on Neil, since I'm no longer the chair, I can safely say the following and be shot down if you like. One of the huge problems we have had in the CEP, sometimes in the ATCM, but in that case in a different way. The CEP is a working place for people with competence. You should have something, you should know something about what you're doing. It's a bit like the scientific committee under CAMELAR. However, what's reality is that within the CEP, there's quite a number of parties that send people and they come again and again with a high level of competence, and there are some who do not. And how do you manage to make the whole committee work in such a way that also that knowledge is passed back into their own system? Here's one of these very difficult problems, and when we communicated about this paper, we all agreed we had no way of solving it, but I imposed that we should tell about it because it is a reality. Now, exactly what these are doing here is not necessarily relevant, but at least they look unprepared. Okay, so what's the present? The present is that the CEP is well established. It has its working procedures and things work well. However, the pace of change in Antarctica has increased, and there's a sense of urgency and priority which still is giving the CEP challenges. And if you can read all this in the distance, I don't know. One of the new issues, of course, is changing climate. I'll get back to that. At the same time, the CEP only has very limited financial and administrative resources, and there's sometimes a lack of data and information, which I'll also come back to in a moment. Financial resources, of course, are provided in reality by the home organization of the chairman. That's been the situation more than the CEP itself has no resources. Very importantly, the CEP has been advancing, and together with SCAR, in its relationship over many years now. And it's very clear that the role of both parties, both organizations, are well understood. That's my impression. SCAR is the supreme provider of scientific advice. And the CEP should, of course, be allowed to ask others and sometimes get input from others. But there's no question SCAR is and will be our prime advisor and the one who should be given most place when we're talking about scientific advice. It's very important that we understand this role. CEP is a management tool primarily. So this work has been important, and I think I look forward to, I think we can say with safety, they will continue to improve. Now, CEP needs to be more proactive and strategic in its work, and that's a hard one when they're overloaded with work as it is. And ATCM, I believe, even more so than today, need to recognize the work, and it needs to perhaps to provide CEP with more clear direction. All of these are challenges to be overcome. And so I have as my almost last slide something about the challenges. The immediate challenge, climate change, we may or may not talk about how much of this is human-induced. There's no question that climate change is going on. And since Chuck Kennicott is going to follow me, I'm going to challenge him to say a little bit about the climate report that was provided yesterday. I have a feeling he was planning to anyway, but the question was raised this morning that perhaps you didn't hear about that. Tourism is a very interesting issue. Tourism overcrowding some tiny parts of Antarctica, and we don't have it anywhere else. Some of the challenges coming in tourism in the future could be, I'm not saying they are, could be advent of airborne tourism, the question of installations on land, whether they are for the ship operators or even for those who fly in. We have a tiny bit of this on Patriot Hills, but at the level they are working, it is no challenge to the environment. It may be some legal issues, but we may even have environmental challenges in the future. Bioprospecting, as far as I know, is not looked as an environmental challenge, incidentally, but as a legal challenge. Keeping the CEP strategic focus is going to be a challenge for the whole group. And in the medium term, we wonder whether the increase in work will eventually invoke a need for intersessional decision-making structures. That's going to be an interesting one, but it is possible to organize that and let the ATCM still continue to do its work as it should be on making decisions at the formal meetings. I might remind you that the CEP report has to be considered by the ATCM, and we had an example about 7 years ago, something like that, when 8 years ago, I think, when we had no ATCM. And yet we had a CEP meeting, and then we called a special ATCM just to approve the report of the CEP. So there are ways to handle problems like this, and it may be there will be in the future. As long as interest in resources are confined to the marine area, we have no problems with the CEP on that side, but that could change in the future. Resources are many things. Tourism, of course, is one of them. The issue of cumulative impacts have been bypassed in the CEP in reality for all its period. That doesn't mean it has not been discussed, but it has not been solved. And maybe the way to handle that is to get this into some smaller group and deal with it strategically. I've now been talking very pragmatically. The three of us figured we wanted to be pragmatic. There are all going to be all those other people here talking about high-flying issues and so forth. So I hope this has been of some use to the total body. And I'm going to use the last few seconds to just remind you of the importance of science into the Antarctic system. And we are going to have the largest meeting, hopefully, of polar scientists in Oslo in June next year. There's information on the meeting sitting outside. It is the result of all the science activities undertaken during IPY. So those of you who are interested in learning more about the science and don't get enough from Chuck in the next 20 minutes, you should come to Oslo and you will learn even more. Thank you very much.